You are listening to Bigfoot, Ground Zero.
What happens when the thinking changes? When conventional wisdom is simply blown up? Could we start over? Where no idea was a bad idea? What if we sought out the truth, however inconvenient the truth might be? What if we found new ways, applying logic with consistent, measured progress, with voices of reason asking why not? What if we use data tracking and predictive modeling? What if we research the science behind the sighting, asking new questions? What if? What if it wasn't about a show but a movement? What if we did this together? Welcome to the future. Welcome to Bigfoot, Ground Zero.
The world waited. Curious. Wondering. Aware. Like a sleeper wakened in the night by a faraway sound. A moment sensed, more than understood.
All right, you're listening to Bigfoot Ground Zero. My name is Dave. Thanks again for listening to the program. I know that there are a lot of other things that you could be doing. And if you are downloading us and listening, you know, later in the week, same thing. I know you're taking us jogging or, you know, doing whatever it is, fishing that you're doing during the week, especially this time of year. But we certainly appreciate it and don't want to take that for granted. The other thing that I wanted to talk about quickly is some of the requests that I've been getting on the Bigfoot Ground Zero fan page on Facebook. You've been asking for more consistency with regard to the show schedule, and I get it because there's a lot of podcasts that are out there that I listen to and I kind of depend on. There's a great one out there, by the way. A guy named Dan Carlin puts on a show called Hardcore History, and that comes out every few months, but man, I set my watch by it, you know. So I know we get together, I know we talk about Sasquatch, I know there's a lot of shows, but for those of you out there who want the consistency with this program, you got it. I've got some interviews lined up over the next month or so that will get us through probably the next 5 weeks, and then I'll dig for more material as it happens. But as I've always said, if material does not present itself, I'm not going to fabricate anything or put on any Sasquatch gratuitous stories, otherwise known as Sasquatch porn. There's a lot of shows out there that do that really well. Anyway, I am sitting here literally in the woods of Maine. We are at a cabin on Belgrade Lakes, and, you know, I'm out in the woods. I went out. I wanted to get the feel for no reason other than that. But I just, you know, I was reminded, and I wanted to get out here because I'm talking about research. And, again, I'm going to bring on Chris Spencer, who has been doing a really, really good job with his Sasquatch research. Now, he's only been doing it about 5 or 6 months. At this point, I would call him a friend. He and I have been going back and forth. He sends me audio files all the time. He's very pragmatic in his approach to research, whereas I'm the guy that every sound that I hear in the forest is Bigfoot. It has to be. Like, I'm worse than Matt Moneymaker, honestly. I mean, Johnny Drama. That's what they call me. But Chris has to consistently call me or email me and say, no, Dave, sorry, that was an owl, or that was a coyote and a pack of coyotes, and there's really not a Bigfoot in amongst them, you know? Anyway, he keeps me grounded, and he does that for a lot of people. He is getting a lot of attention in the so-called Bigfoot community, more from the scientific side. There's people who have been researching a long time who have kind of taken notice of Chris for a couple of reasons. One, his due diligence. He knows the area that he's researching. And second is he approaches it from a standpoint of disproving what he's hearing. And he can't always do it. And some of the things he'll share with us, and he's posting things to the Bigfoot Ground Zero fan page. He's also posting to his group that he belongs to. I don't know if he's going to make that public anytime soon. But when he's comfortable with these things coming out, then he'll put them out. I think what he's getting ready for is public scrutiny. Anytime you make a discovery, and he's got some great ones that are coming out, anytime that you make discoveries or any kind of headway as far as Bigfoot research goes, there's always going to be people standing on the sidelines throwing rocks at you. And it's going to be the people who are either stagnant in their research and haven't done anything new or are frustrated, and it happens, or people who just like to sit on their mom's computer in the basement and create their own little Bigfoot world and throw rocks at you online because they've got nothing else to do. Anyway, I'm going to go ahead and start this interview with Chris. I think you'll like it. He's going to become part of the show, hopefully on a regular basis. If not these hour-long interviews, then we're going to do, you know, 10, 15, 20-minute segments of things that he finds. We're also going to have a segment coming up. Cindy Cruz Hess does the admin for the Bigfoot Ground Zero fan page. We're going to have a segment called Cindy on Sasquatch, and she's going to bring us small segments of, hey, what's going on in the Bigfoot world today? Some of it will be serious. Some of it will be funny. I don't know. It's going to be up to Cindy. Anyway, without any further delay, I will go ahead and run this interview with Chris. On the back end, we will talk about some of the things that we heard, and also I will let you know, some of my observations and some of the things you should go back and listen for, because there's some things I picked up on the second listen of this interview before we actually played it. So, without any further ado, here is Chris Spencer.
So here we are again with Chris Spencer. I know I teased it in the monologue that I would be calling Chris to talk about some of the research that he's been doing. He's had some really nice findings over the last few weeks that he will probably make public shortly. And I'm hoping that, Chris, I'm hoping you can talk about some of those things as we go forward with this interview. But first and foremost, for the folks that don't know you, obviously you and I have been working together for a while now, and consider you a friend, definitely somebody in the Bigfoot community that, for many reasons that I respect. But take us back to the beginning. You've been doing this since about January. What got you started, and kind of how did you get started?
I've been looking for Sasquatch sign for a long time, and back in January, I'd been hiking a lot in the St. Helens area. I really hiked my ass off last summer, but I hiked a lot in areas that everybody hikes in, and I kind of given up on ever finding any Sasquatch sign again. Going back, you know, my first time really was my 2013 experience, and we talked about that in my last interview. But anyways, I just happened to, end of February is actually when I found the spot I'm going to now, and it was kind of a fluke. Yes, Bigfoot was in the back of my mind, but my whole goal was going into this area to look for antler sheds, because up here we've had such a mild winter. Everything's just, it was like 50 degrees up there in January, and I just decided, well, you know, animals might be dropping antlers sooner than normal, so I went into this area, and I've maybe 300 yards past a gated road, I see this X stick structure right next to the logging road, and it was odd. It caught my attention. And while I was walking around it, taking pictures, and this is about, it was just before noon, it's like 11:45 in the morning or something like that. And a dog starts barking, and it was odd because where I'm at, there's really no dogs. There's no, people go up there, but there's not a lot of people. And my first thought was, oh great, wild thoughts, you know, because that does happen around here. And
sure.
You know, I took pictures of these trees that had been placed between living trees in kind of an X formation, and I started walking down the road. The valley that I was headed for, where most of the elk are in the wintertime and where they usually do drop their antlers, is a good 2 miles down the road. And it was just barking continued, and then it kind of turned in, and it sounded more like a coyote. And I had a old Sony digital recorder, and I turned that on, and I maybe walked another 200 yards down the road, and it became obvious to me that it was getting closer, and it just sounded weird. And I got creeped out, and I said, screw it. And I decided to come back when I had someone with me. I'm not going to say what it was. It was a Bigfoot or anything like that, but it was just creepy. It was just really creepy. It was a single animal. And, you know, I left. And curiously to note, you know, as soon as I started heading back up to my rig, it stopped. And it had gone on for a good 20 minutes. I think I got 10 minutes of it recorded on my piece of crap recorder. And, you know, that's when I was like, okay, I need to look into this area. And here I am.
Now the vocalizations or the barking that was going on, how far away from you would you say it was?
I'm a terrible judge of distance, man.
Within
a mile. I can't say, but it was further away when I was looking at the structure, but as I moved further south, it moved further north, and actually I stopped for about a good 5 minutes, just stopped in one spot listening to this, and it got closer while I was stopped. So
it didn't sound like it was disturbed that you were there. It might have not known you were there if it was that far away. I mean,
right.
You know,
I don't know. I can't say anything other than it was creepy. I can't say that it knew I was there. I can't say that it was coming. It was obviously coming in my direction. All I can say is it was weird. You know?
Yeah.
It was just weird. It was one of those things in life where it's like you find something weird and something even weirder happens, and it's like, okay, I need to check it out, you know?
The
X structure is really why I really started hiking this area. And the creepy coyote barking, that kind of inspired me to go buy a real digital recorder and start doing some night recordings when I'm not there.
And by the way, for the folks who are listening right now, Chris was kind enough to send me some recordings via MP3 that... are kind of neat. I mean, when you listen to them, and, you know, hopefully we'll have a show coming up, a live program where we can play some of those sounds, because it's one of those things. And I think, Chris, you've got your Facebook page, but also if you want to post some of those sounds on the Bigfoot Ground Zero fan page, you can do that as well, so we can check those out. But those sounds that you had sent me, the coyotes and such, those are just creepy. So,
yeah.
I mean, what's up like? Because, listen, I love going out in the woods, and I rarely get a chance to hear coyotes or wolves or anything. It happens occasionally, but I feel like when you're there, Pacific Northwest, up in that area, your animal activity is a lot more more active.
I've learned so much about the animals, just known animals in the area with these night recordings. And here's the deal. When there's no humans around, the forest is an absolutely different creature. I mean, I've got just crazy owl stuff. I mean, just the number of different songbirds. And it's just it's like a jungle up there when there are no humans around. It's, you know, I sit here at night listening to the mornings up there, and it's just nonstop, you know, chatter of all these different animals. You know, it's pretty cool.
It's funny that you say that, because those recordings you send me, I know when something comes into that clearing where you're doing those recordings, whether it's an elk or whatever, because all the activity goes down immediately. And then you hear something make its way into the meadow. It's almost like when you walk into the party and you're not supposed to be there, the record skips and everyone looks at you and you're like, yeah. Oh, sorry.
I think I sent it to you. This was a couple weeks ago. I recorded it in a kind of a different area. I just wanted to test it out. And it ended up being a bad place to record just because the wind hits it a lot. But it's also right in the middle of a marsh, and the frogs were crazy. I mean, that's all you hear for most of the recording is the frogs. But at one point, the frogs stop, and the coyotes start. And it's funny. One coyote starts howling, and then the frogs just go silent. And then the coyotes just go off, and they have pups now. And it's the first recording I've gotten where the pups are out of the den, and it's about a 5-minute recording, and the pups are going off, the adults are going off, and it's just insane.
Again, for the people listening at home, as the saying goes, so Chris would send me these sounds, and I'd email him back or text him, definitely a Sasquatch. And he'd be kind and polite and say, no, bro, here's what it is and here's why. And, of course, after that, just be like, oh, man, he's so right. I'm such a ding-dong. But, I mean, you get excited about these forest sounds because – and here's the other thing, too, that I learned. And back me up on this because I think we talked about it. As you're listening to these things, then all you're going, wait a minute, that sounds like the Ohio Bigfoot howl from 1970-whatever. Or that sounds like whatever. And you're like, oh, my gosh, we've been recording coyotes all this time. And, you know, and it's – do you ever find yourself doing that? Oh my gosh, that's a sound that I hear on the internet as a Bigfoot recording. I've heard that for the last 5 years.
Yeah, I've heard stuff, but I've also heard stuff that's not quite right. You know.
Yeah.
I'm sure you. I'll let you lead the interview, but yeah, I've got some coyote. It's different than the rest, and some that's just absolutely. It's not a coyote, but. You know, I don't have anything to compare it to. The crazy sounds that actually occur in nature. If you know nothing about the animals living in the forest, yeah, you could mistake stuff. I've got some crazy owl stuff. There's a pair of barred owls up right where I record, and other barred owls have come in the area, and I've caught them in the middle of the night having these sound battles. and at some point they sound like monkeys, you know, and if you didn't know what a barred owl sounded like, you would swear there was a monkey in the woods. I actually one night me, my partner and my son were up there setting up my digital recorder I set it up on an old growth stump, and I was on the other side of the stump setting it up, and this owl just starts hooting. And a barred owl is creepy in itself. It sounds otherworldly, kind of.
Sure.
My buddy and my son, they also got quiet, and I looked around the stump, and here's my buddy in the prone position with his freaking gun out, and my son hiding behind him. And I'm like, hey, guys, it's a freaking owl, you know?
Yeah.
If you don't know it, you hear it, and especially at dusk or in the dark, you're going to get creeped out.
Now, when you started researching, and again, I love the fact that you don't consider yourself a researcher.
You
had said to me a few. Well, you are, but you said to me a few.
I
times,
actually hate it when people say that, because I just like I'm just doing what's interesting to me. I'm not a professional of anything.
No, man. That's where it starts. So just keep that attitude, because you're going to find a lot of things. And I wanted to say that the question I have for you, I guess, is kind of the progression of things. I've noticed as you've been calling me and we've been talking and going back and forth about things you're finding and this, that, and the other thing, there's been a sort of a progression that you've been going through that I've caught on to. And this is not to catch you or anything, or see if you notice what I've noticed, that type of thing. But there's definitely a progression from when you started in how you approach research and things that you would have, could have done when you started that maybe you can touch on. But what have you noticed as far as you getting into this, where you are now compared to where you were 5 or 6 months ago? And the reason I ask this question is simply because if somebody's going to get into this, maybe they can kind of not make the same mistakes or get to A to B faster, if that makes sense.
I collect every bit of data now. Like when I first started doing recordings, I'd write down the time. Now I write down the time, the elevation, the weather, what the moon phase is. I try to think of every possible detail that most of us take for granted, because there are people out there, like the Olympic Project, who take all this data and they compile it. And if you continue to take the same data over and over a period of time, you can start finding patterns in stuff that happens. Tom Baker, he does a lot of the statistical stuff for the Olympic Project, and really neat guy. I just recently met him. I love that whole group of people, really. But, you know, you compile every aspect of what you're doing, and if you catch an odd noise or a wood knock, then you have all the information of that time, and then you put that together, you know, in a couple of years you can say, okay, yeah, this is all occurring at the same period of time, same season, same weather conditions, you know, and you can find patterns and stuff. And that's one thing that I've gone from just going out there doing my own thing to, you know, I need to organize this stuff. I need to collect the data properly and be able to give it to other people to look at. And then, you know, I look at this place as some place that I'm going to be there, you know, for years, looking around and being, you know, what'd be cool is to, in a couple of years, go back and say, okay, this was happening at the same time as it's happening now, so there's something to that. You know what I mean?
Sure, absolutely. And I feel like there's one element to what you're doing that you probably already know this intuitively, and if I say this and when I say this, you're going to be like, oh, yeah, duh. Of course you do that. But I feel like knowing your area is the most important thing, because it'll help you study, like, these are the animals here. This is where the water supply is. This is where the wind comes from. This is where yada, yada, yada. And one of the things that I've noticed is that you've got that down pat. Is it because of your knowledge of that area in general, or is it because did you do a topographical map search? Did you look at Google Maps? Mm-hmm. Like, how did you get all that together?
It's from beat and brush, man. and that was my intent when I first went up there with my buddy. I'm laid off. Both of us have been laid off. We're construction workers. What better way to spend our time but hike? And I told him when I went out, I said, I want to get to know this area, really know it. And the only way to know it is to hike. And, I mean, we have been all over that mountainside. And there's still, I mean, we still got there. We still don't, we've hiked a fraction of it. I mean, we've hiked well over 100 miles on this mountain, but we still haven't seen everything that there is to see there. You know, I've located 4 major marshes with freshwater. They're basically freshwater springs, and creates a marshy area.
Mm-hmm.
And in each one of these marshes, you know, the animals, the elk especially, feed in these areas. And I find other interesting crap in these areas. So, you know, those. The only way to know that, yeah, I did look at Google Earth, but even Google Earth, it gives you a picture from, I think the latest picture of my area is from freaking 2007 or something in the middle of summer, and it's not what it looks like right now. And, you know, some of the marshy areas that I've found you wouldn't be able to see on the Google Earth. And so, yeah, it's just spending the time and getting out there and getting off trail. We're not hiking on regular trails that other people are.
Sure.
About killed my partner, and my kid just about disowned me about a month ago, because we went down in the valley, and then I decided I wanted to hike up the main game trail, which the elk use, which is basically vertical, and we went from a 50-foot elevation to 2,500-foot elevation straight uphill. And I thought they were both going to die by the time we got to the top.
Yeah.
You know, but I wanted to do it. I wanted to go up the way the elk were. And we actually ran into a herd of elk on the way up. It was cool. They weren't too impressed with it, but they were cursing me, but oh well.
Well, you know what? That's the only way to do it. And, you know, I know there's organizations out there that will do the same thing. I like the fact that you bring people with you, too. And I always say to people, listen, don't be a hero. You go out there by yourself. Sasquatch really is the last of your worries. I mean, you got to get food, water, and shelter. You could get lost. And most people go out there as a day hiker. They get off their couch and they want to go do this. And I've heard of people getting lost. Well, you know, you're not prepared. So definitely bring people with you. And I always do that disclaimer, Chris, because I know there's people out there, probably such as yourself or myself, who listen to these shows and go, you know what, I can do this. But, you know, just be cautious with what you're doing. And so, you know, you've walked all over creation, right? And you've identified some of these spring-fed freshwater marshes and all of that. Now, I'm assuming that the research area you chose wasn't because it was convenient, because I know you would have walked in 2 miles, 3 miles, 4 miles if you had to do it. But you found these structures and you found some activity, so you decided to set up these recording devices. Now, are you doing it to triangulate? Because I thought you had talked about doing that at some point, but are you doing it right now? Go ahead.
I'm just going out. I've picked out several places that tend to, at night, pick up the most sound in the area. And when I say the area, I'm talking about the whole valley. A lot of my early recordings, a lot of the coyote action that I got, they were down in the valley. They weren't up, you know, I'm up on the mountain. And just the way the topography is, a lot of the sound carries right up into these areas that I'm recording. And I have two main spots where I do my recording where I don't get the wind, and it just seems to be an area where I get more of the animal sounds. So,
sure.
I toyed with the idea of triangulating and stuff, but it's one of those things that there's so many other things I'm trying to figure out. Eventually, one of these days, I'll get another recorder. I have two right now, and I'm broke, honestly.
Yeah, I hear you, bro.
I spent a lot
expensive.
Of money. Yeah, and it would be nice. I already know, because the way I position I use a Tascam DR05, and it does really great for stereo sound, but I position it in a way where the speakers are always going east to west, and I can look when I pull it up on Audacity. I can see which speaker is picking up the sound more than the other, so I have kind of a little bit of a direction, a knowledge of what direction the animal is coming from. Not going to pinpoint it at all, but you know, I know like, okay, it's coming more from the east, so it's further east.
So now, let me ask you this question. Because I called you a couple of weeks ago. I'd just gotten down from Mount Monadnock. I was doing a solo camping trip there. It was middle of the week. No one was there. Camping season's not starting yet, really. Well, it just has. But I called you, and I said, I want to talk about mistakes when it comes to research and misidentifying sounds and knowing your environment. And if you're listening out there, this is why I went into all that with Chris originally, because I think you can learn from your mistakes. And here's what I mean. So I had called you, and I even called Todd Neese right after I had talked to you, and you know, two people that I respect. And I said, "Hey, you know what? I've heard these yip sounds and these hay sounds, and it's almost like people communicating in short bursts and yada yada yada." And I got you all excited. Todd got excited, you know. And then following weekend, I went back and I said, "I want to hear, you know, what I think I'm hearing." As it turns out, on this whole mountain area, there's one house that abuts the acreage that's like thousands and thousands of acres. Well, I was within recording range, and what was funny, because the recorder picked it up a little bit better than my hearing could, there's a house not far from there. And they get in that backyard, and they talk normally, or they're doing whatever. You hear the communications, but you only hear it at the beginning, because it's like you're hearing that sound coming. And what I realized was I was picking up on that. And what's embarrassing is I did not know my complete surroundings. And that's like research 101. And to your point, even Dr. Meldrum said the same thing. He's like, look, that's great. If you want to call yourself a researcher, why don't you do this? Pick an area, research that area. Know the water supply, knows the fauna and flora, know everything about that area. And I thought to myself, yeah, that makes sense. You know what? I put the recorder out, and I did what you did originally starting, and I thought, you know what? I'm going to do this. And yeah. I did catch some interesting sounds, but, man, I was so humiliated, and my heart just hit the floor when I realized that.
I've been deleting them, but I have probably, you know, over 20 clips of quote-unquote Woodknocks that I recorded in the beginning going up there that I've finally figured out there's a large bridge close to the area, and when cars drive over it, there's joints in that bridge, and it sounds like a Woodknock when a car drives over the bridge. And it took me a couple times to finally figure out that, why is they Woodknocking every time a car drives by?
We had talked about that. I had asked you that.
Yeah, so, and actually when I took, I took one of my good friends up there who's never been up there before. He wanted to go with me, and I, my normal partner, he's out of town now, and I won't go in there by myself. So I took him with me, and we heard, you couldn't hear the car, but you could hear that knock as the car was going over the bridge, that as it's hitting those joints.
Sure.
And he's like, dude. And I go, dude, it's all right. It's the bridge. And then I explained to him, he's like, oh, okay. And I'm like, I went through the same thing. Cause I just, when I was first up there, I just, oh my God, I'm getting Woodknocks all the time. You know?
Right. Right.
And no, it wasn't that, but that's, yeah, it's the same thing. And it's just, it takes time. You know,
some of those Woodknocks, I mean, don't be hard on yourself, because I got to tell you, there's some knocks that happen that there's no activity on that bridge. I mean, there's a couple that are insane.
Yeah, I've got some legitimate knocks that are unexplainable. You know, the only real explanation is either a human did it or something else, like a human did it. I've got a few that are intriguing.
Well,
one very loud one that I sent you that,
yes,
when I heard it, I mean, I was laying in bed listening. This is before I really started using a Sonic Visualizer, which I use all the time now. But before, when I first started it, I would literally just sit there and listen to the entire recording. And I'm sitting there one night, and all of a sudden, whack! And I'm like,
yeah.
What the F, you know?
Yeah, and that comes out of nowhere. It's almost like somebody either took an axe handle or a Louisville Slugger and hit it right against a really hard tree. And it's funny, because you sent me the audio clip of that, and what was really cool is you sent me maybe 15 or 20 seconds before and a long time after. And what's amazing is when you're sitting there just listening to the forest sounds, crickets, katydids, whatever, and you know it's like 2 or 3 in the morning, I think you told me it was early, but when this happens, it comes out of freaking nowhere. It's just,
yep.
Bam.
Yep.
Go ahead.
No, I just, that actually occurred in March, and that was like the first real recording of something where I was like, okay, yeah, there's something weird here. You'll never hear me say, I've got definite Sasquatch. I've got stuff that I have no explanation for, you know. And
right.
And I, on a personal level, I believe, yeah, it's Sasquatch, but I can't prove it, you know. But I can record it, and I can just, you know, document it.
So. Yeah, there's I think there was one of those recordings we had talked about, and I know you know what, you're listening out there right now, you're going, guys. Okay, you're talking about all these recordings. Where are they? Well, Chris has posted some of those on the Bigfoot Ground Zero fan page, Facebook page. So check some of those out. Chris, if you want to post any more, that's at your discretion. I know you're doing some research. I know there's some things you're going to come out with later, but I'm gonna skirt the edge of what you're comfortable talking about or not. I'll just ask you things, and if you don't want to, then talk about them. But what is and it's weird, I keep going back to those recordings, and as you sent me those, you can almost orchestrate in your mind, if you close your eyes, knowing the area now, I can hear what's going on where, and it's just crazy. You're almost like you're there. So to your point earlier, knowing where you placed the speaker on that recorder, that orientates you to everything. And if you know that, and you close your eyes, and you're doing looking forward in your mind, you can almost see, and correct me if I'm wrong in this, but you can almost see in your mind where those elk are coming from based on the sound left to right or whatever. And do you spot those game trails because of that?
Well, I put it on the game trails because that's where I plan on catching animal sounds.
No. I mean, kind of like the animal activity is what I should say. So when you hear it recorded and you hear where the animal activity is.
When I hear things and when I actually listen and not just sonic visualizer, I have a pretty good mental picture of the area and I can like, okay, yeah, that's coming down this trail or that's here or there, but that's because I've been up there and I've walked around the area and you can kind of visualize what you're recording and where it's at. I mean, it's nothing like precise at all, but once you've done it enough and you start kind of getting a visual on what you're hearing.
Sure. Okay, so now what's the most difficult thing about what you're doing? Because you're getting into it now. You've been in the bush. You're going to get equipment. You're analyzing. Is it that it now consumes all your time and it's crazy? Or, I mean, what is it about what you're doing right now that is the most difficult part?
It is consuming. It's very addictive. Right where I'm at today, I have so many ideas in my head trying to figure out what I want to do next. I go by my gut feeling a lot on stuff. I'm at a point now where I'm going to give the area a break. I'm not going to go back up into it for a couple of weeks. And there's a lot of reasons for that. And we'll talk about it in a little bit. But, I've gotten to a point where I need to take a break from the area and just look at the last 3 months and organize the last 3 months, because like we were talking earlier this morning, I've got all this data, notebooks, I've got files on my computer, and I need to just sit down and make a real report of each incident that I feel is something, It's awesome going out and collecting all this data and hiking around and seeing all this stuff and learning about your area and the animals and the vegetation. And I love all that. But then when you actually start having things happen, you got to record that and you want to record it in such a way that somewhere down the line, maybe somebody with credentials might be able to use it.
Right. But then you walk the fine line of having your area taken over by multiple people. You're really, really considerate of the environment and the surroundings, and almost kind of the way that you orchestrate your research. And I don't mean to get, so fancy and, all that about what you're doing. But, you had spoken to me, it was a few minutes ago before we got on for this interview, you had talked about some of the reasons behind why you are no longer going to your specific area, and it has to do with, I think it was the elk and cows and stuff like that. Talk about that specifically, because people need to know, again, in knowing your area, you need to know the cycle of things and how things work and when to appear and not appear. Can you talk about that a little bit?
One of the main reasons I picked this area was not, found the structure, but just kind of common sense to me. It's my area is above what is considered a elk wintering ground. And so as the season changes, the animals start moving up out of this valley that they're in for most of December through May almost. Okay. I have one game cam and I just put it on one of my marshes. And when I first when I first put the game cam out was March, and it would go, I would check it every week and I'd get maybe one or two pictures of a single deer or a single elk. Somewhere around April, I have it all written down, but somewhere around April, I went up there. The week before I had, 12 pictures on the camera, and I think three of those pictures was me. The next week I went up there, I had 98 pictures. I mean, in a period of 5 days, it had been 5 days since I'd been there. Mm-hmm. And I was like, okay, cool. The elk have moved up. And that's exactly what it has. Spring developed as vegetation started growing up on the mountain where I'm at. The animals move up. And I had this one little bull. He had little tiny nubbin spikes on him. I don't know if he ever lost them, but he loved my camera. I have him on like 3 or 4 different days where he goes up and he noses it, licks it, you know, sticks his eyeball right up into the camera. I mean, just cool stuff. Now, where I am now, the last couple checks, I'm not getting as many pictures again, but all the pictures I'm getting are very, very pregnant cows. They're ready to pop anytime. And around the area, and we've been all over there, and we've not found very much sign of other predators. We've found when we got way off track, when I had them hiking up that mountain, we found an area where a cat had shredded some trees. So, you know, I'm aware there's cougars up there, but we haven't found any bear sign. And I actually commented to my partner a couple of weeks ago that I found it really weird that we have not found any bear sign. Well, it just so happens I was up there this weekend, and there is bear shit all around that marsh where those pregnant cows are hanging out. So, you know, you put two and two together, you know, apex predators know these animals are about to calve.
Sure.
And you know, any opportunist, any omnivore opportunist, such as a bear, it's going to hang around. Because when elk are giving birth or deer are giving birth, they're at a very vulnerable time. It's easy pickings. So right now, you know, they could be having babies right as we speak. But I know right now that area is a focal point for the predators that are in the area, and the cows are getting ready to pop. And I've just kind of decided I'm not going to be there when all that's going on.
I am dying to get into a piece of evidence that you recently found that ties into this. And I'm going to ask you about it, and you can pass or not pass, and that's fine. The interview will go on. But you recently cast what I think is one of the most significant footprints I've ever seen with regard to Bigfoot. And it wasn't you who found it. I think it was your friend that you were, who, by the way, was a huge skeptic, and he wanted to go up there with you to bust your balls, basically. But
yeah,
he found this, right? Let's do two things. Let's talk about how you found this specific track. There's so many things about this that I want to ask you.
Yeah.
How you found this specific track, what you did to preserve it, kind of go through the research part of that. And I'm going to ask some questions as I go along, because it all also has to do with the timing with this and as the pregnant elk are coming up through the area. So talk to us, you know, the day that you and your friend stumbled upon it, you know, what were your thoughts, the whole nine yards, just give it to us.
Anyways, my buddy, he's another iron worker, and over the years he's been really good about giving me crap for believing in Bigfoot. He had come by my house last week and actually slept on my couch a couple days, but I started playing some of the stuff that I've recorded up there, and Friday the 15th, while walking into the area to retrieve my overnight recorder and check my game camera, because I've been recording on the same marsh as my game camera.
Mm-hmm.
My regular partner and I had something whistling at us as we came in, and it's pretty intense. It's not a bird. And so I played that for my friend while he was sleeping on staying on my couch. And he's like, I want to go up there. That's weird. And I'm like, yeah, my regular partner couldn't go with me. I'm like, I need someone to go with me, cause I won't go in there alone. And I'm like, okay. So the next, night we went in there, and I was going to set up my, digital recorder and just check the game camera. And so we got up there, and, I set up my digital recorder. It was about 6 o'clock in the evening. And, it's an overgrown old logging road. The logging road itself is just, it's all fresh grass and, you know, it's like a field grass, you know, and,
yeah.
We walked, after setting up my digital recorder, we walked around to go check my game camera, and we noticed right away there was a, like, matted down trail in the grass, and then this one area that was just kind of matted, like something had laid down in it. And I didn't say anything at first. My buddy, he's like, well, that's kind of weird. And I'm like, yeah. And he goes, there's no poop in it. And that's, and I kind of laughed. I'm like, yeah. And for anyone that knows, and it's not all the time, but the vast majority of the time, when you find elk or deer beds, you'll find a pile of poop in it, because when the animals get up, they take a dump. And we've been up there, and we've found, there's thousands of deer and elk beds up there, but we've also on several occasions, not a lot, but on several occasions near these marshes, we've found beds that were large, really large, and had no poop in them. And it's just something that I've, I'll put down a journal and I make a mental note of it. Well, we find this kind of matted down area in the grass, and this one wasn't large. It was weird though. It wasn't even shaped like a regular bed. And my buddy, who's never been there, and I will say this, the guy is an avid deer and elk hunter, and he's killed more big bulls and bucks than anybody I know. So he's not incompetent when he's out in the woods. That was his first thought. He's like, this is weird. He goes, doesn't look like a regular bed, and it's no poop in it. And so I made a little short video of it. And then he was kind of laughing. He goes, I think there's a Squatch in these woods. And I'm like, shut up, dude. You know, he's joking around and crap. And so I put the camera down, and then I go down the trail. And there's a little trail off this road that goes in and comes up behind my camera, so I can avoid setting off camera, have the camera pointed into the marsh. I get down there and I flip it open, and I'm looking how many pictures I got, and there's only 22 pictures on it. And I yell, like, this is weird, only 22 pictures. I usually got close to 100. And Jeremy's like, Chris? I'm like, what? And he goes, Chris, you need to come look at this. And I'm like, what? And he goes, get up here now. And so I go up there, and there was a molehill right there, and I walked literally right over this thing. I didn't even see it. And I get up there, and right in the middle of this molehill is this track. And he's, excuse my language, but he's like, what the fuck is this? And I'm like, no way. And then I look at him, because to be totally honest, I thought, did he make this himself? Because he's that type of person. He's a joker. And he's looking at me, he's like, what? He goes, what is this? And I'm like, it's a track. And
yeah.
So, and he's kind of in shock, and I start taking pictures, and I made another video. If you want, I'll post that video on your page.
Yeah, no problem. Yeah.
I'm like, dude, we got to get back to my car. And my car's a good mile hike away. I had, some plaster of Paris been rolling around in my trunk for over a year, because I'll be quite frank, I never thought I'd find a track to actually cast.
Sure.
In my opinion, it's a pretty rare thing. And, we ran almost back to my rig, got the, plaster of Paris, and came back, and, I cast it. While we cast it, we looked around a lot, and I was just so absolutely freaking excited, and he was excited too. I've got to get some HydroCal, because it took 2 hours for that thing to set up. Around 8:30 or so, it's getting dusk out, it's getting dark, and he goes, I'd rather not walk out of here in the dark. And I'm like, well, I got a headlamp and a flashlight, but I don't really want to walk out of here in the dark either. So we got a big piece of bark in and we just scooped the entire molehill. The plaster had set up enough that it, you know, I wasn't worried about it breaking then, but it just, I didn't want to flip the whole thing out. So we just took the whole molehill.
I got to ask you this
and,
question. I got to ask you this right now. I'm sorry. Just came to mind. What does that say? If you're trying to relate to somebody what it's like to see a footprint this big, out of place, clearly a barefoot laying down on the ground print, what does that say to you? You're a woodsman. It kind of freaked you out a little. But your friend, who was a non-believer, looks at this thing. He's been years and years and years in the woods hunting elk. He's been around bear. He kind of freaked out a little bit. That's kind of a big deal to me. You know what I mean? That's powerful.
He was over here yesterday because I finally cleaned it pretty thoroughly yesterday. And he's like, I can't believe this, dude. He's like, I don't even know what to say. I'm like, I don't either. Because, you look at the print in the dirt, and then you look at it in 3D now, it's like, holy crap.
Holy crap. Anyway, so I'm sorry. It's getting dark. You guys kind of dug it out. Take it home to clean it. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Well, yeah, that's basically it. We took the whole molehill and brought it home, and I've had it in and out of my heated gun safe over the last week, and I'm handling it with kid gloves because it's plaster. I'm so afraid I'm going to break this thing. It's ridiculous. It's finally dried out enough. And yesterday morning, I got enough of the dirt's come off of it. And the dirt was dried out that I took a toddler extra sensitive toothbrush and some toothpicks and kind of went to town on it. So
if I'm a skeptic and I've got to play devil's advocate here, I do this. So, you mentioned a game cam. You mentioned the footprint. Where's the camera in relation to the footprint, and why did you potentially not get a picture?
Because it walked behind the camera.
Oh, it was not in the front. Okay.
No, the camera's down kind of to the southwest into this marshy area where I've been capturing all the elk and the deer feeding. And whatever this was, it avoided the camera completely. And maybe it didn't know it was there. Maybe it did. I don't know, but.
Okay. Now here's the thing. I asked that question to avoid the 50 emails that I'm going to get about, well, why didn't you ask him why the camera didn't get the Sasquatch making the footprint? Now I'm going to get emails saying, why didn't you ask him why the Sasquatch now avoided the camera? So I guess I just opened a whole Pandora's box.
I don't know, dude. I have a lot of ideas in my head, but they're all hypothesis. They're all ideas. There's nothing set in stone. All I can prove and say to you is there was a footprint of a bare foot behind my trail cam in an area where human beings do not frequent besides myself and definitely do not frequent without shoes.
Oh yeah.
That's all I can tell you.
That print is legitimate. I mean, it's long, it's big, it's wide. It's one of those things, and it's so frustrating, right? Because you want to believe that these things are just like every other animal or whatever category they fall into. I have no idea where they would fall into the big scheme of things with family, but it almost is like it's when I don't want to go there, because you get the elk licking the camera, you get the elk die, but you get this one thing, this most significant finding in the past however many years scientifically, just decides to walk around behind the back of the camera. And as a person noting your story, I'm just like, damn it, how did they know to do that?
Well, for one, I've been up there every week since the beginning of March, late February, so it's not inconceivable that they didn't know that it was, because they've watched me mess with it.
Okay. They could have been standing by. Yeah, you never know, man. And that's the other thing. You never know. And we'll talk about those whistles in a second. I mean, how many times do you walk past a deer, an elk, a bear that might be 20 feet away from you in the bush or 15 feet away, and they just don't move, and you walk right by, you have no idea that you're there. Probably more times than not, right? So it's like when you're in the ocean, I was actually bumped by a shark one time, and it was quite a humbling experience. But you know, you'll be within, and I actually said the words mommy. I said the word mommy and jumped back on my surfboard, but, you know, there I was, a grown man. But anyway, so, I mean, you just gotta wonder how many times you're being watched. But let's shift gears here, because you had some sounds, and again, any of this stuff that you want to post on the Facebook page, I'd be grateful. I know the people who are listening would like it. Some of these whoops were really interesting. The whistles were interesting. But you made a comment, and I'm going to kind of tee this up for you, and if not, I'll kind of explain, you know, what a conversation was. But some of the reasons why you thought these whistles that you heard, and tell us about the experience back up. Tell us about the experience that you guys had coming out of your research area back to the car, and what you experienced with these whistles. And also, and I think it was, believe it was back to your car, and also why you think that they weren't birds. So I'll shut up now.
Okay. So going back to, it was Thursday the 14th. I hadn't been up there in longer than usual because I actually took a trip up and spent some time on the Olympic project. And, so I wanted to get up there and get a recording going as soon as possible. And me and my partner, Ryan, decided to go up. And once again, we usually go in, you know, around between 5 and 6 in the evening and set up my digital recorder. And we'd gone down there, and it was pretty overcast, kind of dark day. So the damn place already had a creepy feel to it. And
sure.
We got in there, we set up my digital recorder. But on our way out, at some point, Ryan, he stopped and looked at me, and I, we kind of looked at each other at the same time. We heard movement to the north of us in the timber. It wasn't loud, but it was you'd hear a branch or a twig snap, and every time we stopped, it would stop. Now, my first reaction was, we might have a cat following us, because
right.
I know there's cougars out there. And, you know, both Ryan and I were a little edgy. We made it out alive, obviously, and nothing of it. But yeah, for a good, you know, 20 minutes while we hiked back to my car, something followed us. It would stop when we stopped, and it would move when we moved. Don't know what it was. But at the time, you know, it was creepy. Well, the next morning, we go in between 9 and 10 in the morning to pick up my, digital recorder, and we get to one point because we come down a logging road that's gated. You can't drive down there. Yes, Forest Service can, but not us. And at one point, these older logging roads that are all overgrown with grass and alders split from it, and we come to that point where we split off to head in the east direction, and we hear a whistle, and it's kind of far away. And I looked at Ryan, and Ryan looked at me, and I'm like, okay, that sounded odd. That didn't sound like a bird. And we started walking again, and we hear it again, and it got more elaborate, and it was closer. And then we'd hear one in kind of in the distance. So I know it was two things whistling back and forth. But the whistle that was closest to us, it sounded like a human being. And both me and Ryan are like, there's no other people up there. There's no other cars parked up by the gate. We have no reason to believe there's anybody up there. And where it's coming from a very, there's several marshes in the area. There's some timber, but it's brushy. You're not going to walk through there without making noise as a human being. And basically, it followed us all the way to my recorder. I had a recorder I was carrying, and I caught some of the whistles on that recorder, but quite frankly, because I was carrying it, you hear more of me moving and Ryan breathing and saying what the F than you do the whistles.
Mm-hmm.
Thankfully, my overnight recorder recorded almost all of the whistles, at least the whistles that were close.
Okay.
And every single one of those whistles, when you put it up on the sonic visualizer, is different. There's nothing mechanical about them. And one thing you'll learn if you get into sound, birds are mechanical. They do the same sound repetitively, and the sound will vary in strength on your sonic visualizer, but it's always going to pretty much look the same. Every single one of these whistles is different. Mm. And a little bit different in sound, too. At some point, a couple times, it goes low, high. It just, honestly, dude, it sounded like a human being.
It's almost like when I heard those recordings you sent me, it's almost like a monotone whistle up, down, and then like at the end kind of thing. And then it just sounds, I don't know how else to say it. Maybe you can put those on the site as well, but they just sound different than any other thing. I'm a hunter as well. I've hiked my whole life, camping, whatever. And I've never heard bird activity like that. I never have, because you can tell it's the same source. Whatever's doing it is the same animal, but it's so, it's fluid and it's different each time. It was just bizarre. I don't mean to go off on a tangent, but it was just crazy.
No, it was bizarre hearing it in person too. we got to my recorder. I picked up my recorder, and at that point, we had a choice. The only thing at that particular time going through my mind, I wanted to see if it continued to follow us. And I had no desire to go towards it. I know some people, like even my skeptical buddies, like, I would have jumped down on the brush and gone after it, And it's easier said, hindsight is 20/20, but at the time, both me and Ryan, we weren't necessarily freaked out. We were like, this is weird. Let's see if it follows us. And we did a 180 and we headed north. And as soon as we changed direction and went in a different direction, the whistling stopped. Whereas the entire whistling encounter recorded by my overnight recorder goes on for about 20 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
And so when we changed direction, it stopped. And we ended up hiking into another marsh that we hadn't been into in a long time and hiked around it for a couple hours, but we didn't encounter any more whistling or any bad vibes or nothing changed direction.
Do you think next time you get in a situation like that, and you might in that area because there's something obviously residing there, you're going to do anything like whistle back? Are you going to go toward
no.
it? Are you okay?
I've said this from the beginning. Like my partner Ryan, in the beginning, he's a big fan of finding Bigfoot. I am not. he wanted to go up there and fucking beat on trees and hoop and holler, and no, I said I forbid him. And I'm all about observing and trying to catch stuff. I'm going to be absolutely unobtrusive as possible.
Yeah.
Because who knows what all that means? I don't
know.
What
you don't
it would
know what you're
mean.
Saying. You don't know.
I don't know what a whoop means. I don't know what a howl means. I don't know what they're doing.
Right.
I'm not going to do it back because I don't know what that might mean to them. If anything, my personal belief is when you do that crap, you're just letting them know where you're at so they can leave.
Right. Right. It's a great point.
See, I want to say something here. And these things don't like people. I'm sorry. There's a reason they're not found. There's a reason they hide. You go being really loud and obnoxious, bringing a lot of people into an area that they're at, they're going to leave. Why stick around? They don't want to deal with it. They don't want to deal with us.
Yeah, and why would you?
Yeah.
I was thinking somebody coming into your house and starts banging on your furniture.
Yeah,
it's kind of irritating,
exactly.
Right? You're probably not going to leave, but my point, and your point is well taken. Not that I've ever howled or banged on trees. That's for other people. I'm just kidding. I have. So, I'll curtail that activity. So, yeah, I mean, dude, you're doing a lot of great work out there. And I know that people are listening right now are, they appreciate it. Because a lot of us, man, we don't get out. I know I told you of this area in New Hampshire that I'm going to start putting the recorders at. And again, if you're listening now, what I'm going to do is post a structure video that I found made. And then there's also some tree breaks that, Chris looked at, and he just was like, you may as well put some recorders out there because that's kind of interesting, like similar to some of the things that you found. So no doubt you've inspired me to now pick up my audio devices and go place them out. And I think hopefully, you know, people do that. That's kind of one of the reasons why we do this podcast. You know, at Ground Zero, it's one of those things where we're interested in the science behind the sighting. We love to talk about sightings. We love to talk about experiences. But like what you're doing, here's how I'm approaching it. You know, here's why. And man, if we could just get more people like that. I know Todd Neese is like-minded like that. I know the folks at the Olympic Project are like-minded as far as that goes. So hopefully, you know, I just think as a community, and I'm on a soapbox here, I apologize. As soon as we can kind of get out of the finding Bigfoot phase and those shows no longer make money for, you know, as far as reality shows go, I think we'll be better off because then we'll be kind of left alone in a vacuum to do what we want to do. So I'll let you speak to that. I just want to get my two cents in.
No, I can't prove anything. It's just fascinating to me. But when I do catch unexplainable stuff, I want to be able to document it, and I want it to be the truth. I'm not going to tell you that I definitely have Bigfoot in my area because I can't prove it. I will tell you, I've got some weird stuff that could be Bigfoot in my area. And that's all I can say at this point. And, you know, I didn't see the individual whistling at me. I didn't see the individual that made the track make the track. So all I can say is, this is what I got. This is what's been going on. What do you think? It's, you know, as far as the finding Bigfoot, I watch the show. I'm going to admit I watch it. I don't agree with a lot of stuff that goes on it, but it's a show. It's for entertainment.
Right.
And if you're into Bigfoot, what else are you going to watch on TV? Come on.
Right.
You know,
it's true.
You know, and there's nothing wrong with it. I actually have friends now that are part of the BFRO, and I really meet people. And it's just everybody has a different approach. I don't have to agree with everybody's approach. But I will say this. I try to listen to everybody because you can learn something. If I keep my mind open, you know, because I've had stuff happen where it's like I've heard about it before. I've been like, yeah, whatever. And then all of a sudden I'm like, oh, what the heck's this? You know, you got to keep an open mind. I'm not going to condemn anybody in what they believe or what they're trying to do. But I do think for the entire Bigfoot community, there should be more cooperation and collaboration. I think people get very possessive about stuff and they don't want to share certain things. And that's the conundrum for me. Like I told myself I was going to share everything if I found anything. Because I wasn't going to be like those people that hide everything and are secretive about what they're doing. I didn't want to be that person. But that being said, now I understand that because, you know what? My biggest fear is a bunch of yahoos going into my area and scaring them off. And
right.
I know they're not going to, you know, here's the deal. They're not going to be in that specific area where I'm recording all the time. It just happens. I happen to find a spot that they utilize at certain times of the year. And I hope to be able to put a pattern together and figure out the best times to be there. You know, and the only way I can do that is to do a nonstop recording of the area for the next couple years. And I'll be looking at other places in the overall general area. But then I can get an idea of when they're there, why they're there. Try to figure that out. Try to, you know, and then I can figure out, well, they're going from this place to this place. And obviously they're going to follow food. They're going to follow vegetation growth. But they're also going to avoid humans. And if you take an area that you've got the kind of activity I got going on in it and then all of a sudden saturate it with a bunch of people, let's just go somewhere else. There's so much area up there. They could be anywhere in that valley. They don't have to be where they're at right now. And so kind of being secretive, yeah, I get that now because I don't want other people going in there and ruin up a potential place that I could study for years to come, you know?
Well, you have to be really careful because when the first podcast that I did before anybody even knew that it existed. Literally, I put it on, you know, Blog Talk Radio, and I said, I want to do this because I met some people who had a sighting and whatever, right? Hardly anybody even listened to the show, but there were people who went to the spot that I described and started. Yeah. Literally the next day, I saw postings on Facebook, all this stuff, and I'm like, holy crap, this is why people keep stuff a secret. And I wish I had never talked about the actual location. A couple of people I know now, they're good friends of mine. It's kind of funny. But, you, man, I hear you, because as soon as this comes out and it's a show like this or whatever, the wrong people might hear it. And the next thing you know, they're trampling around. Even if it's within a few miles of your area, that could affect it.
Right.
So,
You know, I will add to this. That's one of my biggest fears now, and it's given me a greater respect for those that do keep things close to their chest and not share a lot. I have a respect for those people because I understand that feeling now. That being said, if that was to happen and people saturated my area and then everything died off, what's to say in a couple of years from now, after the other Yahoos get tired of going in there, they don't come back. So, you know, they're dynamic. They're who's to say, you know what? I might be getting this type of activity this year. Next year, this time, they might not even go in there. They might go somewhere else. You know,
right.
There's enough area. There's enough game. They don't necessarily have to be in one spot all the time. So for me, it's exciting because I've got this great opportunity right now, but I have no, you know, I hope that it becomes something that an ongoing thing that can last for years to come. But I also am not delusional in thinking that it's going to happen all the time. And that's where you got to think long term. You know, I know there's going to be times where I'm not going to have any activity out there at all. I'm not going to find anything. But that's the whole process. I just get to know the area better and then, you know, look for those patterns. Because they're going to move around. And I've got ideas now, and there's more areas in the overall area that I want to start investigating and looking around and doing the same kind of thing that I'm doing here. It's neat in that respect that you have if you look for the right stuff, the potential is there to find other activity in other areas. You can't get so focused on one spot. I'm really lucky to have the spot I have right now and everything, but it's not going to be forever, and they're not going to be there forever. They might be gone right now, as far as I know. As soon as the elk pop, they might leave. I don't know. Who knows?
Or maybe they were coming just ahead of it.
Yeah. I can't say for sure. That's where I've got to go up there, and I just got to record and look around and be consistent about it for years.
Yeah.
That's the only way you're going to learn anything, you know?
Yeah, they're not going to leave a forwarding address if they move on. So, I mean, you got to get what you can get while you can, you know, which is why I understand you've been out there multiple times per week. It seems like every time I call you, you're like, yeah, I got to swap out the recorders. I'm like, good Lord. It's just how many hours do you think you spent in the last 6 months either in the field or analyzing sound recordings or whatever?
I don't know. I don't know, dude.
It's too many to count.
I have, you know, I could sit down on my computer and tell you how many hours of audio I got and just add it all up. But
tell the truth. Have you ever been listening to any of your audio and all of a sudden you wake up and realize you fell asleep to part of it? You've been doing that so long?
Oh, God, yeah. Yeah.
And then you don't know how far to go back?
Yeah, I've had a restart because the way I have my recorder set up. Well, in the beginning, I had my recorder. It would record 3-hour chunks, which is hard to deal with. And I finally figured that's not the other thing. I'm learning, dude. I'm learning about these programs and the recorders that I'm using.
Sure.
And it's a total learning thing for me. But I've got it so now my recorders record 50-minute chunks. So if I was to fall asleep, I'd just go back and restart it, which I've had to do on 3-hour chunks before, but I don't even do that anymore. I don't. Sometimes, you know, if I just feel like listening, I'll listen, but generally I put everything up on audio visualizer, and then you can just run through, and once you've done it long enough, you know what the birds look like, you know what the frogs look like, you know what the owls look like, you know what the coyotes look like, you know what you're looking for. And so I can just whiz through a 50-minute file in about 10 minutes, you know, and then move on. But, yeah, that's the way to go, man. And I learned that from David Ellis up at the Olympic Project. He's helped me out a lot with understanding how to use the audio visualizer. There's still, I have a lot to learn. And there's a right way to do things and a wrong way. And I'm kind of in that amateur learning phase right now. I want to do things the right way.
Yeah, but you're ramping up quickly and you're not developing any bad habits, you know?
Well, that's it. Yeah. That goes back to also listening to everybody. Everybody that's in this field has something to offer, I believe. And I've reached out to a lot of people and a lot of different people, and I've gotten a lot of good information from people that I don't necessarily agree with.
You know, right.
You can't be totally closed-minded. It's easy. Sometimes I see stuff that's posted or whatever, and I get like, why? You know, but that's why I have a secret page now, just because I'm not going to post everything that I find all over internet. I got the people that are in my secret page or people that I respect that give me great input. And hey, if somebody looks at something that I found and says, no, you're wrong, just tell me. I am perfectly good with criticism. Criticize the heck out of me. You know, I caught over a month ago, I caught what sounded like whoops. And a couple of them are still suspect, but, you know, I was really excited about it. You were excited about it. Yeah. But I kind of got with David Batdorf and Jeffrey Kelly, because I like their show, and I've talked or Facebooked with David quite a bit, and they kind of helped me figure out possibilities. And there is actually an owl called the great gray owl. The female does a contact call that sounds like a whoop. I don't know if what I caught was a whoop, but one of my recordings, it went over a 20-minute period, and it, like I said earlier, the whoop is mechanical. It's the same every time.
Sure.
That speaks a bird. So, yeah, I was a little disappointed, but thank God, you know, they told me, because I don't want to go around saying, okay, I've got a Bigfoot whooping when it's a freaking owl.
Right, you know? Right.
And that's an example of why I try to reach out to people and talk to them. And I want people to look at my stuff, you know, and tell me if I'm wrong. Tell me if I'm being dumb.
Yeah, no, I hear you, man. You're doing all the right things. I mean, you know, as you know, I mean, I bounce questions off you all the time, and I love the fact that you try to debunk things before you're, you know. I'm the opposite. I'm like that monkey in a cage. It's all excited. It's like jumping around, and you have to kind of pull me off the ledge a little and go, okay, monkey, relax a little bit, because this is what this is. But, you know, it's just because, and I think this speaks to, I think, what a lot of people go through. We all want to be validated in our belief in this thing that's out there based on the evidence that we've seen. It's like, so faith is a jury trial, and you might need more evidence than I do before you come to the conclusion, but that's kind of what we want. And so my behavior like that, you balance me out. I think that's great, because I think the world needs more of that, because it keeps everything, you know, kind of, well, balance, right? So justice is blind. That's kind of what we need here too. So anyway, so listen, we're up against the clock at the moment. I got to move the show along and a couple other things that I have to put up. But listen, I'd like for you to become kind of a part of this show unofficially. I know you have your own things that you go on through, and I know that you don't like to affiliate with any one organization, which, by the way, I think is really smart. But if you don't mind, from time to time, if I could just pop in, if we can do like a 20-minute segment here and there, just to bring onto the show, that'd be great.
No, I don't mind at all. You're my friend. So.
All right.
And, you know, you hooked me up with Todd, and Todd's cool. And Todd told me a couple of weeks ago, he's like, don't join any groups. Be an independent. You can affiliate, you know, with other groups, but just be yourself. And that's kind of what I want to do. I respect everybody. And I want to have friends in every group. You know, I want to be able to collaborate with everybody. I don't want to be in one set organization and in competition. Competition
right.
is terrible. For this, you know.
Right. Right.
Eventually, it'd be nice if the academia accepted this as a real animal. But as long as we're all doing our own thing and not collaborating together, no one's going to accept really. A lot.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, the media and everything, the crazy factor gets more attention than the people actually doing legitimate work. You know?
And by the way, when I sit down and talk to my friends, and I've got a buddy who, I hope he's listening, my buddy Dave, he thinks what's kind of cool is what we do, like you do and what I do, is kind of bring credibility to the subject. But people, when you talk to them, they are curious to know why you believe what you believe about this topic. And it's almost like, it's not a religion thing, but it's almost like you have to have your ducks in a row when explaining why you're not a complete moron for believing in this. Because it can happen anywhere, like at a party,
oh, yeah.
at work, whatever. And if you point out certain things, they're like, I think that Patterson film might be fake. Well, but there's tests on the thing. And I don't think anybody would have thought to do, you know, like you have to have like little thing like that. But again, I mean, going back to the whole credibility thing, I think, and again, I mean, it kind of sounds like I'm kissing your ass. I'm not really. What I'm saying is just the research, the solid stuff that you're doing. I just think we need that as a more of that kind of as a benchmark. And I think as more credibility, is lent to the topic because of the things that you're doing, more people like you will come out of the woodwork, and then hopefully it kind of balances out the woo factor. But anyway, bro, I'll get going. We got to move the show along. I really appreciate it. Look forward to having you on again, and I'll be in touch offline. We can talk about some of that research and stuff that you're doing.
Sounds good.
All right, my man. I'll talk to you later.
Okay, bye.
Thanks, brother. Bye.
All right, that was the interview with Chris Spencer. Again, I want to thank you, Chris, for coming on the show. I know you've got a lot to do. I know you are spending hours going over audio recordings. You've been casting footprints. You've got a lot going on. So for you to come on the air with us for an hour and share your experiences and your results means a lot. For those of you out there listening, I would like for you to take a minute to think about one of the moments where I kind of challenged Chris. Now, Chris and I are friends, but when it comes to interviewing, when it comes to getting to the bottom of the truth, I've got to challenge people. And I did that with Chris, and I don't know if you noticed or not, but there was a moment where I saw an opportunity to ask about a potential discrepancy, and that was the footprint in relation to the game camera. And I asked him because I thought to myself, well, if he's pointing the camera at the game trail and the footprint was in that area, why would we not have a picture, a definitive picture of a Sasquatch? And without missing a beat, he said, listen, the footprint was behind the tree. And I thought for a second, you know what? That sounds a little too convenient, but I know a little bit about how people lie, and if somebody's lying, they take a second to kind of process what you're saying and then figure out a response to that. But his was genuine, and it was just right out of the gate. Hey, the footprint was behind the camera. The other thing that I think about that and why it might be legitimate, why I think it is definitely legitimate, is that if you're pointing a camera at a game trail and you're right there, now, a Sasquatch can probably lay off the trail, you know, multiple yards through brush and be incognito. And when the thing needs to spring on an elk or a deer or whatever, those things are quick. But by the time they realize it's coming, it's probably a little bit too late. And so I found his explanation plausible. And I don't think at this point, I mean, I don't think anywhere down the road, I don't think Chris is going to lie to us about anything because, again, he does not sugarcoat anything. It either is or it isn't. And if it isn't, he'll let you know. And like I said in the opening monologue, he's corrected me many times. Everything out there is a Bigfoot sound to me. But he'll keep you grounded, and he's an honest guy. Anyway, next week we are going to have Todd Neese on the show, and Todd is coming back. He, a few months ago, was on the program talking about his experiences. But since he is a Bigfoot researcher, he's out there in the field conducting research and actually looking for ways, you know, ways that people aren't actually doing. He wants to go out and be a little bit innovative. And you know what? I want to ask him about those things because I feel like research has gotten a bit stale. I feel we're not making progress. And I feel like everyone is frustrated because we all want to make progress. But the problem is, until somebody makes a breakthrough and kind of leads the way into a new direction, we're kind of left with what we have. And we know the game cameras aren't doing it, right? We know all we've got is visual sightings. We have some great casts. We have a plethora of anecdotal evidence. And I mean, you can actually convict somebody in the court of law with circumstantial evidence. Well, we have it out there. We just need a body. We need a picture. We need something to validate what it is that we believe. So Todd is going to get into some of that with me. And I'll ask the hard questions. I want to find out, you know, what people are really doing, because most of us are not out there. And I feel like I've gone out and I've done some research on my own. It's not been consistent. I'll be the first to say that. I feel like my job is to pull people together who are doing research. And hopefully, at the end of the day, all of this will help. But again, if you're out there listening, and if you've got a chance to go out in the woods, set recorders, have some fun, do whatever the case is, the more the merrier. Because I feel like of all the people out there that believe in Sasquatch, if we had 30,000 people out there looking for it, we're eventually going to find it. Anyway, thanks for taking the time to listen to the program. Again, I definitely appreciate it. We're going to be more consistent with the schedule. I've got at least a month, maybe 5 weeks of material laid out ahead of us, and we'll go from there. Again, my name is Dave. This is Bigfoot Ground Zero. Until next time, over and out.
He's tired and he feels like he can't win. No matter how he tries to live, he never quite fits in. Bound and gagged and left for dead is how it's always been. He finds it hard to breathe sometimes when he finds it hard to swim. And Carl said, I wish I had someone to call my own and have my lover wait for me whenever I get home. Wish I knew what happened every time two people meet. Oh, the world is big, but I know there's nobody made for me. Becky lived in a one-horse town with ribbons in her hair, waiting for that shining night to take her out of there. Becky never wanted any more than she could hold. She'd given up on finding love a long, long time ago. And Becky said, I wish I had someone to call my own and have my lover wait for me whenever I get home. I wish I knew what happened every time two people meet. Oh, the world is big, but I know there's nobody made for me. Out on the street, they both stood there in silence. They were both afraid to speak. So Carl, he stepped up and then he gently took the hand of the lover he'd been looking for since before his life began.